This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Andy Bitter of The Athletic, who covers Virginia Tech, will join us in about a half an hour. But right now, we go to beautiful Chestnut Hill, where Jim Christian, head coach of the BC Eagles, joins us. Coach, first of all, it's good seeing you. How are you doing? Life okay?
Life is great. We're doing great, and great to see you guys. I miss seeing you in person.
Yeah, same here. Let's get right to it. We get cranked up next week. I really wished you'd go out on a limb and start playing somebody. I know everybody's going to go casual this year on the sideline, which means you take 20 points away from Jay Wright and Villanova. But, man, you are not messing around right from the get-go. That is a great test right out of the block.
It was a little disappointing because I kind of wanted to see what suit he would wear because I know he's got a large collection. But, guys, really, to be honest with you, you know, I made this statement yesterday when people were asking me, and it's these kids, these young people, they've been through so much. And I told we're meeting back in June when there was speculation that, you know, maybe we're going to play all ACC games and we might play 27 of them. We might play 28 of them. And they were excited about it. Like, they were like, let's play games. So I told them at that point, look, if we're going to play, if we're going to do all the things necessary to play, and you guys take care of yourselves, and we're going to play people that, you know, we think are great teams. We're going to really learn a lot about ourselves and schedule the best teams we could play. So obviously we've gone out and done that because I think they deserve it. And obviously the other part of this is that, you know, there's going to be no fans at the game. So to me, to spend money in a guaranteed game situation, it just doesn't make a lot of sense because you know, our university, like all universities, is losing money. So we can play great teams 40 minutes away, a bus ride away, and play nationally ranked teams. Why wouldn't we do it? You know, these kids, I want these kids to be excited. I want them to be rewarded for all the things that they're putting in. And it's got to be about them. And I really believe that with my heart.
Well, you get Villanova, then Baylor, Arizona State, St. John's, and Oregon before you come back and play home. I mean, in the Mohegan Sun bubble, if you will. There is some advantage to doing this, though. I mean, yeah, the schedule's a gauntlet. I understand that. But you've got some pieces from your team a year ago, and I'm thinking of Steph Mitchell, Jay Heath. I'm going to hope that Winston Tabbs is finally healthy for you for the first time in about 2 years, Jimmy. That could help you find out a lot about your club in the first week of the season.
I think we got a lot more pieces than people think. I wouldn't do this, to be honest with you, unless I had total belief in this team. I think people don't understand. First of all, Winston is 100% healthy, and we hope he stays that way. I think he's one of the best stories in college basketball for the way he's rehabilitated. He's 2 months ahead of schedule, how he stayed through a pandemic to rehabilitate. It's amazing, and it's inspiring to everybody who's around him. The pieces that we've added fit for what we do very, very well. And both freshmen and transfers fit everything. It's almost like the needs that we had were filled. And we were lucky and fortunate to get the guys that we've got. You see guys who obviously can shoot the basketball. We were not a consistent three-point shooting team. With Mekhi Ashton Langford, our athleticism and a big wing, we didn't have anybody like that who can attack the basket the way he can attack the basket. Obviously, we're still waiting to hear on the eligibility of James Karnick, but we're optimistic about that as well. So I think we're excited. I mean, we're excited about the depth of our team, and we could come at you in waves, and we're going to do that because, unfortunately, it's not fair to these kids. We haven't had any exhibition games, a chance to work out some of the rotational things, or for them to earn roles. So we're going to let them play it out. We're going to come at you in waves and let guys decide, you know, who's out there because there's not much difference between our team from 1 to 10. I mean, that's how close. When we scrimmage, it's always a 1 or 2 point game, so it's exciting.
Coach, I know we just witnessed the Boston College Notre Dame football game, but I'm starting to wonder if you and Mike Bray got together and said, hey, listen, you put together a schedule between now and January 1, I'll put together a schedule between now and January 1, and we'll compare notes. I think both of you have lost your minds. I mean, listen, as a fan, I want to see good games, but man alive, you guys are not messing around. Those schedules are ridiculous for the first part,
you know,
which
funny,
is great.
It got to be a little bit of a joke with the people who were putting together the Mohegan Sun event. When people would drop out for whatever reason, the first call, let's just call Boston College, they'll play. And I want that. I want our kids to have that. I told our team that. I want that reputation. Look, if they want to play, The other part of this thing is that we've got five games on national TV, and our players are not allowed to have their families come to the games.
Yeah.
You know, so their uncles, their cousins, their friends, they can't come. And what better way, if they can't come, let's get on national TV, let everybody see these kids play. Like yeah. I said, it all comes down to me. Man, they've been through a lot, man. We haven't been here. Like, we didn't come back in the summer, so our players weren't here for 6 months. They were dying to come back and play. And when I saw how happy they were just to be back and have some normalcy, you know, let's go play the best teams we can play. I mean, that's the mentality I think that we have to have for these kids. They deserve it. They've been through a lot. You know, as I told you guys, we have 8,000 people on our campus that have to do the best they can to prevent this disease from spreading around our campus because all of our students are back and our players live with them. So 8,000 people sacrificed for us to play basketball here and did an amazing job. I mean, our school has done an amazing job with this. And, wow, it's a reward for everybody. Let's go play.
Yeah.
You have we've always joked when I see you during the course of the season, you always say, well, I got Duke and Carolina and somebody else in the front end of the conference schedule. Well, you just kind of punched that notion in the chest, didn't you? I mean, let's go play who we can. Given kind of the mentality of your team, though, and I think you got one of the best stat sheet guys in the league that nobody talks about in Stephon Mitchell. To me, he's like right there behind you need a toolkit guy, a guy to go do a little bit of everything. He's going to do it for you, Jim.
Yeah, he's a senior leader now. I mean, he gets it, and I think that as the team does better, he gets more notoriety. I think he realizes that. I think he understands that. And, you know, that's what he does. He finds ways to win the game, whether it be on the offensive board, whether it be a hustle play on defense, whether it be an offensive rebound. I think if you ask the coaches in the league, everybody would want a guy like that. You know, guy doesn't need the ball every possession, but he can dictate the outcome of the game. And that's what makes him special, just his competitive nature. And it spreads. I think it spreads to a lot of different guys on the team. And again, we have a really, really good group.
Again, here we are trying to get to the conclusion of a football season. We're less than a week away from the start of a basketball season, which didn't have a conclusion last year. We've talked about the importance of this particular basketball season somehow finding a way to get to the end point. Rick Pitino recently, a guy that you know extremely well, said, hey, we should push back the year. I mean, you're sitting there up there at Boston. I mean, you tell us, you're living it every single day with tests and everything else. What do you think is going to happen from a basketball perspective as far as a season goes?
I think it's one of those seasons where you just have to be optimistic and do everything you can day by day and keep your feet and make your decisions and enjoy the day as best you can. Like I try to have the mentality with our team that we're lucky and fortunate to play basketball today as a group. Let's have fun with it. Let's have as much fun as we can have. Let's be as prepared as we can. It's almost like a mentality that I use sometimes. It's like, hey, sometimes you've got to study unbelievably hard for an exam, but there could be a blizzard coming the next day, you know. But you got to get through that, and you got to just enjoy it. You got to enjoy this process and do everything you can to remain hopeful that you're going to get a chance to play all of these great games in the fashion that we play them. And if something happens, if there's a curveball thrown, just – you know, reevaluate and get better and do it again, because I think that's where we are right now. And it's just, to me, the mentality of with which you do this is the most important thing.
You know, we heard a lot about teamwork in the off season, getting us back to playing sports in the fall, Coach. We heard great things about the AD calls in the ACC. We heard great things about the football coaches' calls. I've also heard there were some very frank and candid conversations, and a lot of teamwork went into this basketball season we're getting ready to start, too. Can you speak to some of those calls and kind of what may have surprised you or what were you most pleased about?
Yeah, I just think the willingness of everybody to get together every week, and there was so many things going on that we discussed. I mean, basketball-related, other areas, obviously things going on in our country, that it was just really good for me to hear everybody's perspective, to get everybody's take on everything, share ideas, you know, without anybody holding back and everybody just candid conversation. I think it kind of made the group a little bit tighter, because obviously everybody's gets wrapped up in their own season, their own issues. But everybody was really contributing for what they felt would be best for the league and best for the game of basketball. I mean, if you think of obviously the people on the call, there's so many veteran Hall of Fame coaches, and And I just wanted to listen and hear, and it helped. It helped me deal with things on my campus, helped me deal with things with our players. And it was something I looked forward to every week.
Speaking of looking forward to something, I want to hear from a coach's perspective. We've lived this football thing every week with conference cuts, and you just see coaches literally pulling their hair out going, man, I hope we can get to a Saturday. You do three tests a week. You wait till Saturday morning just to find out who's eligible to even play. You're going through the same thing from a practice perspective, an everyday deal, season 6 days away. Coach, how would you explain to the rest of us, it's not necessarily an ordeal, but just the pressure of anticipation of, all right, we took the test. How do I get the information back? When do I get it? How quickly can I turn this thing around? Because I got to imagine you're walking on eggshells literally every day just trying to get through this thing.
That's a great question. I think the one thing that, you know, as from a basketball standpoint, we tried to play a little more positionless, you know, because if you're just teaching, you know, a player one certain position, if he's a three-man and you're just teaching him to play from the three-man set and he's out or the backup three could be out as well, what are you going to do now? And you have to reach. So we try to teach more of a positionless style. So irregardless who's out for us, like, you know, one through four for our team is really the same. Anybody could be at any different spot because of that, because there is so many uncertainties with it. And then I thought that was important for us to do and everybody understand, you know, our defensive positioning from one through four, where it is, you know, obviously there'll be some tweaks for game by game, but, you know, for us to be a little more, positionless, I think really helps us prepare and helps them get ready as well, because, you know, we could have a scrimmage and you could just take a couple guys out and nothing changes. The pace of play doesn't change. What we're doing out there doesn't change. It's just a matter of understanding the small things that we're teaching.
Mike Bray brought up something last week when he was on another topic and said he hadn't been told what a minimum number of players would be to play a game. Have you gotten any indication what the minimum? I mean, is it we're going to have the old no. Gene Hackman, my team's on the floor type thing here? What are we doing?
I think we do need some direction in that, but I agree with what Mike said. I think this is a year that there should be nobody who sits out. This is a free year for everybody here. Nobody should be penalized for a free year. You know, we had three people transfer from our program, and all three players are eligible to play at their next school, but only because I think it's right for kids. You know, I think kids should be able to play. I mean, especially this particular season, and I'm happy for those kids. I want them to play. And the guy who's sitting out on our team, obviously he would help our team, but I think we all need people. I think we all need people to be available, but we all need people to be in a positive frame of mind, you know, to share things with their teammates. You know, especially if you look at the landscape of college athletics and it's a free season, in about 2 months they're going to be eligible to play most likely unless something changes on the dramatic level at the NCAA convention. Everybody kind of feels like they're going to be eligible to play in January anyway. Why are we penalizing these kids for 2 months? I don't see a reason for it. I don't see any huge advantage by anybody because there's so many waivers out there that are getting approved. So I really believe that this is the year that all hands on deck, man. Everybody should be able to play.
By the way, you, Coach Mack, Jerry York, y'all have done a really nice job breaking in Jeff Hafley and explaining how the ACC works. You've done a tremendous job.
I think he's depending a lot more on Coach York. What has he not seen?
All right.
But he's done a tremendous job. And again, they've done a tremendous job. But I give our whole university credit. If you look at it, and there's 18,000 people on this campus going to class, because we have online, we don't have all online classes. We go to class, living in the dorms, eating in the cafeterias with everybody. And so in order to play one game, we're going to play one football game, one basketball game, you know, for the most part, 8,000 people, you know, have to do the right thing. So, you know, what a statement for Boston College. And obviously our medical people have done a great job. I'd be remiss if I didn't call out Dr. Camo, you know, our version of Anthony Fauci, who's done a great job here. So I think everybody at Boston College should be proud. Obviously we've had our issues like everybody else, but everybody should be proud of the effort being put in for everybody to enjoy their college experience.
Amen to that.
That's awesome. Hey, always great to visit with you. Be well. Stay safe. Enjoy guys. The bubble at Mohegan Sun, as they say.
I appreciate it. I'd be remiss if I didn't say hello to my dad, who I know is watching. He watches you guys every morning. It's the only chance I get to see him. So, Dad, I miss you. And I'm hoping you can come up and see us soon.
I like it. Stay safe, Coach. Wish you the best.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks. You bet, Jim. Thank you. Take care. Jim Christian, coach at Boston College. Always a fun visit. His team starts out, as he said, next week at Mohegan Sun in a bubble event that will take the course of about a week, by the way. The Wednesday before Thanksgiving, all the way through to the next week. And they'll go to Minnesota as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge and then play NC State in their first conference game. So we'll keep an eye on the Eagles.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
You know, I hope Jim Christian has a good year, Wes. I told you during the break, I find him to be an easy guy to root for. And they've gone through some tough times, and it's never easy in this league. Never easy in this league. And I'd love to see them have a really nice season. That would be a real feel-good, given how crazy this pandemic and everything else has been going on.
I always enjoy talking with him. He's always very forthcoming about his team.
Yeah.
I thought he was today as well. Like his staff, Bill Wozinski, Chris Cheek, Scott Spinelli, who's been in this league not only at Boston College, he worked at Maryland as well. He's got a good staff. It's a tough job. But I'll say this. I think there are a lot of guys in the basketball business pulling for Jim Christian because his team's not been healthy for about 2.5 years. A lot of it coincides with Winston Tabbs, and he's right. If Winston Tabbs comes back at 100%, could be one of the really, really good stories in all of college basketball. Because 3 years ago, remember you and I were talking on the old radio show about Winston Tabbs lighting up a preseason tournament in Fort Myers, Florida.
Yep.
And then he got hurt.
Yep.
And, you know, let's hope he's back and healthy because that could be a big, big deal for Boston College this year.
You're exactly right. 100% right. All right, time for the Lumberjacks. Let's go up to the smart room. All the smart people up there in Bristol. There he is.
Smart room?
I mean, the smart people in Bristol. We just front the operation, but the smart people are in Bristol. I've told folks that from day one. What's it like working for ESPN? I said, man, a bunch of smart people in Bristol. So they got nothing to do with the folks on the air. It's the smart people make this thing run.
Yeah. Are you trying to sound like Danny Ford when you say that?
People. Smart people. All right, you ready to roll?
I was born ready.
All right, let's do it.
Let's start tomorrow night in Derby City. Louisville averages 201.6 rushing yards per game, which is fourth best in the conference. Meanwhile, Syracuse gives up 224 rushing yards a game, which is worst in the conference. Even without Javian Hawkins, over under 200 rushing yards for the Cards tomorrow night against Syracuse.
Over. No hesitation. Over. You line up, you run the ball. That's what you do.
Maurice Berkeley certainly will touch it. There'll probably be one or two guys maybe that haven't gotten a lot of reps that touch it tomorrow night. And that guy right there will definitely run it.
Ooh.
Malik Cunningham. So, Orange going to have their hands full tomorrow because I think Louisville will be looking to turn the lights on bright on Friday night at Cardinal Stadium.
Hey, and Malik just went for $197. Don't think he has he can't pull another one of those rabbits out of his hat tomorrow night. That's certainly possible.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah. Bulletin board material for my Orange defense right there, fellas.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Big bulletin board.
Yeah. Next one, over under 225 yards passing for Sam Howell versus the Irish next Saturday. Boston College had held Howell to 225 in week two, his lowest output of the season thus far.
Over. Going to sling it all over the yard.
Yeah, in my opinion, the game a week from Friday is going to be determined by the Carolina run game. What Williams and Carter can do. Because you guys have seen this, particularly against Virginia, when Williams and Carter are kind of held in check, if you will, Carolina struggles to get the two-way going. And that's the problem. But over under 225, I will take the over for Sam Howell.
I'm going to disagree with you, Wes, with the running backs. I think that key to that game is, can North Carolina stop Notre Dame from saying, Hut, hut, handoff, second and three. Hut, hut, first down. Hut, hut, second and four. I think Notre Dame's going to line up and go, hey, you know what? Hal's awesome. Your receivers are awesome. Love your backs. Your line's good. But you know what? We're not going to let you guys see the field. We're just going to absolutely swallow you whole and just play keep away. So we'll see how that goes. We got plenty of time.
Kind of like what
NC State. Kind
of like what Liberty. NC State might do Saturday night to Liberty.
It's the same game plan. I think to me that's the key of the game. If North Carolina defensively can put up a fight, watch out, because I do think North Carolina is going to score on Notre Dame. But I think Notre Dame's going to score on North Carolina and could score a bunch.
All right, Trevor Lawrence has played Florida State twice in his career. Both of those games, Trevor ends up with four total touchdowns. So over under 3.5 total scores for Trevor this Saturday.
Over, 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 over. I mean, these questions are easy. Are we going to get to the hard ones here? I mean, come on. You don't think Trevor Lawrence is going to light this thing up like a Christmas tree on Saturday? You're crazy.
How long is he going to be in the game, though?
That I don't know, but it won't matter who's the quarterback.
Well, it will for this question.
Yeah, well, he's going to get four at least Saturday. He hasn't played in 2 weeks. Yeah, he's heard all this stuff about it falling off the Heisman train, and they're going to go play Florida State. You think he's not going to sling it all over, and Travis Etienne's not going to go crazy? Of course they are. I'm telling you, when Clemson's a chaser, they are dangerous. I mean, they are really – they are now a chaser. They're not a defender. They're a chaser.
Point of clarity, over under four touchdowns, do all of them have to be passing?
No.
I'll take the over.
Yeah.
Okay. Over under – 1.5 rushing touchdowns for Virginia Tech against Pitt on Saturday. The Hokies lead the conference with 24 rushing touchdowns. Meanwhile, Pitt has only allowed 6 of them on the entire season. There's a hard one for you, Pack.
Over, 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 over. Hokies going to run the ball, man. That's what they do. I'm going over.
I'm going to go under only because I think Virginia Tech has gotten into a little bit of the throw game in the red zone too. The Trey Turner throw against Liberty, some of the other things they've done. I'm going to go under here. I think they may get one on the ground, but I think the rest of them might come by air, not by ground.
Okay. That's going to be a good game. We got Andy Bitter coming up here in about five minutes, and that game is very competitive. I think that game could be higher scoring than we think. We'll get into it.
Oh, yeah. No question. Yeah.
All right. Can't wait for that one. Sneaky good game. Liberty and NC State on Saturday. Over under 37 minutes that the Flames possess the ball against the Pack. Liberty's time of possession was at least 37 minutes in both of their wins against ACC opponents earlier this season.
Under, under, under. Under.
If State wins the game, it better be under. If Liberty has it 37, they will win the game. I'll say under two. I like NC State Saturday night. I just like the way they're playing. But Liberty does not need to have that ball 37 minutes or 40 minutes or 41 or 42. That would be a bad thing for the Wolfpack.
I think the more interesting question there, no disrespect to the Lumberjacks, the smart ones, is the winning total. Is it over or under 37 to the winner? Points. I think there's going to be a ton of points in this game. Now, I may be wrong.
I think that's another department in the smart room.
Yeah, well,
I think that's another department.
That's the other Lumberjacks question. That's what that is.
Nobody here gambles. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's when Josh Macri passes the mask to Drew Brooks, who breaks down totals. I think the winner is going to be 30s or more. I do. I think, again, I may be 100% wrong. Wouldn't be the first time. We maybe come back here on Monday and go, the game in Raleigh produced 24 total points. Who knows? Right? It's college football. But I think both those teams have the potential to score a lot on each other. I do.
The passing of masks, by the way, is very unsanitary. All right, last one. Over under, one half more ACC football games that will be scheduled for December 19th, Mr. Durham.
Are we saying there's one currently scheduled or two? Because how are we counting the championship game?
Well, there are currently, yes. Yeah, I mean, there are currently two. But either way, the question is, will there be another one? The key word in here is not is the word more.
I understand. I'm going to go over.
Okay.
I hate to say it. I think it's inevitable that it's going to be over. I mean, at the pace we're going, what is it? The last 2.5 weeks, we have seen 39 football games either postponed, canceled, whatever the combination may be. I don't sense that number slowing down as we get into the holiday season and beyond. I suspect we'll have at least one more. At least one more on the 19th.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
All right. We've spread the wealth all day today, but now we want to bring back an old buddy. Andy Bitter of The Athletic does a great job covering the Hokies and other stuff. And Virginia Tech rolls into Pitt this week at 4 up and 4 down. I don't think any of us anticipated Virginia Tech at 500, Wes, as we're coming into a holiday season, right? I mean, I certainly didn't. I thought they would have a better win-loss total than what we've seen so far.
Well, and David Teal, as Andy joins us, David Teal talked about it this week with remaining games, Andy, Pitt, Clemson, and Virginia. The 4-4 Hokies could finish with a losing regular season for the first time since 1992. And to be honest with you, Andy, it's hard to fathom that that's a possibility.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, they had a taste of that a couple years ago. If you include the postseason, they did finish under 500. They've been sort of straddling that line. 6-6 a lot of these regular seasons, but it would be right there in front of you, you know, pretty stark if you're under 500 to finish the season. I know this is a weird season where you're playing a full ACC schedule, basically, with Liberty tacked on, but it's not something people here in Blacksburg are used to, and they're not taking it very well, to be quite honest.
I gave a stat earlier this week, Andy, that Virginia Tech is 1-10 against ranked teams since 2010 at home. So maybe in some respects, hey, we don't have a ranked team this week at Pitt, but hey, we're away from Lane Stadium. Is it good that maybe they're getting away from the confines a little bit to just say, hey, let's just take this thing on the road. It's just us in this locker room. Let's go play.
Possibly. If it were someplace other than Pitt, maybe I would buy that. But Pitt has historically been just a terrible place for them to play. I know they won 4 years ago when they went up there in Fuente's first year, a really tight one. I think it was 39-36. They had three guys that went over 100 yards in that game, but that has been very much, not the norm when they go up to Pittsburgh. The last time they went there was just an outright disaster. They gave up 654 yards or something like that, just got completely run over. So if it was going to another place in the ACC, I think I might agree with you there, but Pitt is just, it's a house of horrors for them every time they go up there.
All right, Andy, let's kind of dig in here a little bit on Saturday, because we talked earlier this week about the Hokies' offensive line and Pitt's defensive line, Virginia Tech's ability to run it, Herbert, Blackshear, whatever the scenario might be. Is that the side we want to watch on Saturday? Do we want to watch the flip side with Virginia Tech's defense and Pitt's offense?
I think the big show is Virginia Tech's offensive line versus Pitt's defensive line. I mean, you're talking about a team in Pitt that has the best rushing defense in the country. Virginia Tech has the best rushing average of all the Power 5 teams that have played at least three games this year. So that's strength on strength. It will be interesting to see, are the Hokies going to be full strength for this? Khalil Herbert has been working his way back from a hamstring injury. If they don't have him, then I don't like Virginia Tech's chances as much. If they do have him, that's still going to be a tremendous challenge to go up against that front. But, you know, Virginia Tech struggled a little bit last week, late in the Miami game, handling that physicality and that, you know, caliber of defensive line they're going up against. And it's only going to get tougher from here on out. I mean, Pitt's probably the best defensive line in the conference, if not one of the best. Clemson's way up there. UVA's got a pretty good defensive line. So we're going to see what the Hokies offensive line is made of. I know they had a lot of 300 rushing yards early in the season, maybe not as stiff of competition as they're facing now, but this is certainly as big of a challenge as they'll have.
Andy, how would you define this year to date for Virginia Tech? I mean, every time you want to fall in love with them, they give you a stiff arm. Every time you think, oh man, they're going nowhere fast, they give you an interesting performance. You go, hey, that team's got a chance to do something here. But at the end of the day, you're four up and four down. So how would you define this season for them?
I'd say that's Virginia Tech for the last 10 years. I mean, you can go back to the end of the Frank Beamer era where, you know, they beat Ohio State one week up at the Horseshoe and then come back at home and lose to East Carolina. I think that team finished 6-6 in the regular season. So it's sort of been more of that for, you know, nine, almost 10 years now. But this year has been especially strange because they started the season so well when they were having a lot of the COVID issues there. And as players have come back into this team, the roster has gotten fuller. They have not played as well. And part of that is they're playing a tougher schedule. You know, say what you will about Liberty, say what you will about Miami, whether you think they're ranked properly, they are ranked right now. So that's perhaps a bit tougher competition than the beginning of the year when they play NC State, you know, missing Devin Leary. They play Duke to start the season. They get Boston College at home and win that one pretty big. But yeah, it has been a tough team to figure out. And I don't make predictions every week. I don't put that on the record every week, but I do make predictions in my mind, and they've been mostly wrong this year because I never know which team is going to show up from week to week. It could be the one at Louisville that shows great energy out of the gate and plays pretty well, or it could be the one against Liberty that's just kind of, you know, zombies going through that whole game until the end, and by then it was too late. This has been just an incredibly tough team to figure out.
All right, Andy, in light of kind of where this game is Saturday and what they have left here and the expectations and the momentum of which before COVID and before everything settled in August that kind of fractured the season at the front end, it'll be regarded as disappointing. Does that change the dynamic in the offseason to 21, much like the end of 19 changed the dynamic for 20 for Coach Fuente?
I'm not sure. It'll be real interesting. I mean, these next three games are not gimmies by any sense. I mean, you get Clemson. Obviously, that's going to be a really, really tough game. I don't think anybody expects them to win that one. But Pitt, UVA, those are sort of 50-50 games, I would say. I see the percentages up there. I don't even know if I would give them those good percentages in those games. But, you know, you get to that Virginia game. Say you win this one and lose to Pitt. You're 500 going into that Virginia game. A lot's at stake there. Can you finish over 500 to finish the season? Can you avoid losing to Virginia for a second straight year? You know, Fuente sort of got over the hump last year, and it felt like things were going well, and then they gave it back a little bit at the end of the year with the Virginia loss, the Kentucky loss, you know, sort of the Baylor flirtation. I think he lost a lot of fans with that as well. I going into this offseason, it would not help his cause if he's losing to UVA for a second straight year, or finishes under 500, or heaven forbid goes 4-7 if they lose all three of these games coming up. You know, I don't know if Virginia Tech would even consider a buyout in that situation. It's $12.5 million right now. It goes down to $10 million on December 15th for a cash strap program that's going to face a pretty big revenue shortfall. I don't think they go that route, but man, it feels like whatever Fuente had built up early in these 5 years or kind of got over the hump last year, kind of giving it away a little bit here and maybe not having that forward momentum as a program.
Andy, you've seen Virginia Tech play both Liberty and NC State. Switching gears on you, Liberty and NC State play Saturday night in Raleigh. Again, I know you're not in the prediction business, but if you had to, what would you say, given what you saw with Virginia Tech against both those teams?
I would say watch out, Wolfpack. Do not take that game lightly. I think Virginia Tech did a little bit. And, you know, Liberty, I still don't quite believe that ranking for Liberty. It feels a little inflated to me, but that is not a pushover of a team. That's not a team that you'd say, oh, it's a group of five independent. And, you know, it was an FCS team not too long ago that they're not going to compete. They're going to go in there. They're going to compete. And I think Malik Willis, a quarterback, gives them a chance in any game that they're playing in. So I think the Wolfpack are like a 3.5-point favorite in that game. I don't know. Without Devin Leary as the quarterback for NC State, I question that line maybe a little bit. I think that'll be a really good game. I'm interested in seeing how that one plays out.
All right, Andy. Be well. Always appreciate the time. And you can find Andy's work on the pages of The Athletic. Appreciate it, my man. Stay well.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Final segment of a Thursday. We are slowly, and I do mean slowly but surely, getting towards a weekend. We have football tomorrow night, which is beautiful in the league. Knock on wood, we have that game. But we also had the NBA draft rocking last night, didn't we? How about that, West Durham?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Well, Patrick Williams was the first guy out of the gate, right? Patrick Williams went fourth overall to the Chicago Bulls. Devin Vassell, his teammate, went 11th to the Spurs. Cole Anthony and Spike Lee went 15th to the Magic. Then in the second round, Vernon Carey Jr. to Packers Hornets. Elijah Hughes to the Pelicans. Trey Jones to San Antonio. Jordan Ward to the Bucks. And Cassius Stanley to the Indiana Pacers. So you got your Vernon Carey jersey or your LaMelo Ball jersey there in Buzz City. So I'm looking forward to seeing you rocking those.
Or my Cassius Stanley Pacers jersey. He was my favorite ACC player last year.
You wouldn't do that. Myron Metcalf, by the way, from ESPN, tweeted this last night. Since 2016, Florida State's men's basketball has produced more first-round draft picks than Florida State football.
How about that? That's all you need to know right there. That's all you need to know right there.
Yep.
By the way, Mr. Durham, I was messing around late last night on NBA draft nuggets for us, and I didn't know how much time we'd spend on the show today with it, but I'm just going to throw one on you.
What?
Yeah, I'm going to throw one on you.
Okay.
The ACC, the ACC has now put at least one player in the first round of the NBA draft for the last 32 years. Since 1989 till last night, you can always find at least one ACC player, right? So I was curious last night, started messing around. All right, that means 1988, we pitched a shutout. Do you know the highest drafted ACC player in 1988? Do you know who it is just off the top of your head? Because I was just curious who that would be.
In college.
All right.
The 86 draft was the Brad Daugherty, Len Bias, that group.
88.
The 88 draft, 1988?
Yeah.
Tom Gugliotta?
No, but you have the right team. It's the right club.
Vinny Del Negro
was the first ACC pick in 88 from NC State. And Charles Shackelford, and ironically, both of them second-round picks. The league only produced... Yeah, Shaq.
Kinston.
There you go. So the ACC did not have a first-round pick in 88. That's the last time it happened. But Vinny Del Negro was the highest selected ACC player in 88. And I just thought that was kind of a cool nugget because that's your bar bet, by the way. We try to give you at least one bar bet a show. But if you want to impress your buds, you come up with that one right there. Vinny Del Negro.
Yeah, because 1989... was that J.R. Reed? I think 1989, J.R. Reed was top five to the to your Hornets there, Pac.
And that started the run.
The old building.
And that started the run of 32 consecutive years of at least one first round pick from the ACC. Now keep in mind, in 88, you had first round picks from Pitt, Syracuse, and Notre Dame, but they were not members of the Atlantic Coast Conference in 88. NC State. In fact, there were only two ACC players in the first two rounds selected. So the top 50 selections in 88, Vinny Del Negro, Charles Shackelford, NC State. That was it. So it's been a pretty good run for the league.
Wow. that was an interesting, and that's an off season for us on, by the way, the 88 ACC basketball season is a year that when you look at it was probably highly regarded nationally, but did not have, and we're not talking saying that Del Negro and Shackelford weren't great players, but Carolina only had, I want to say, Ranzino Smith as a senior that year. I don't think Bryant Stith was a senior at Virginia. No, he wasn't. He was young in his career still. It's an interesting year for ACC basketball, by the way. It was just a unique year because the league was good, but you didn't have the highline All-America right. That was a guy who was going out to the NBA as a senior.
Right. You know who hopes 88 repeats itself? Since you're bringing up 1988? That would be Notre Dame football. Why, you ask?
Yeah,
well,
you're
because
right.
In 88,
Tony Rice.
In 88, the Lakers won the NBA, the Dodgers won the World Series, and Notre Dame won the national championship in football. I will remind you, as we sit here, this particular year, the Lakers won the NBA. Unfortunately, the Dodgers cheated America and won the World Series, and Notre Dame is
they
sitting in the.
They didn't cheat.
Yeah, they did. They cheated. Flat out cheated. Everybody cheats in the World Series now. After the Giants won it in 10, 12, and 14, from that point on, everybody started cheating in the World Series. Crazy. But nevertheless, I digress. But Notre Dame is hoping that history repeats itself in 1988. So there you go. I thought I'd give you that little 88 tidbit.
All right, very quick. John Moody watches this show from Greenville, North Carolina, by all accounts of his social media files, he is an East Carolina University Pirate fan.
Yes, sir. Good people.
But you know what, John? We're willing to step out of the map here for just a second because you have said to us this morning on social media that when COVID-19 comes to an end, can I come cook a whole hog for the crew? Hashtag Packer and Durham, hashtag Eastern North Carolina style. I like the soft piano music behind a whole hog on the grill, by the way.
We could go. I don't care what the music is. Man, you and the hog, let's go. You know what? I am all in. Anybody from Greenville, North Carolina that's in the mood to do barbecue, it will be spectacular. Not good, spectacular. The answer to the question is yes, in all caps.
Yes. John, here's the other thing. I respect the fact that you use the hashtag Eastern North Carolina to declare vinegar as opposed to Western North Carolina to declare tomato. Right, Pac?
Very distinctive. Respect. Love them all. It's all tremendous. It's great. I will say yes to all of that. And if Robin the Duke fan wants to bring in his hauler, we'll just set everybody up in the backyard and let's go.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, Sirius XM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.